From the JAMA Network, this is JAMA Internal Medicine Author Interviews, conversations with authors exploring the latest clinical research, reviews, and opinions featured in JAMA Internal Medicine.
Hi, I'm Marianne Widener, the editorial manager for JAMA Internal Medicine, and I'm here talking to Dr. Julia Baudry from the Research Center for Epidemiology and Statistics at the University of Paris, and Dr. George Chavarro from the Harvard School of Public Health and Harvard Medical School. Dr. Baudry and Dr. Chavarro, welcome and congratulations on your publication. Dr. Baudry, can you give us a brief summary of the study you conducted on organic food and cancer risks?
Thank you for having me. The data we used were from the NutriMed Santé study, which is a study, a web-based observational prospective study launched in France. We examined the association between cancer risk and organic food consumption. So 2 months after the enrollment, the volunteers of the NutriMed Santé were asked to provide information on the consumption frequency of organic products. And they could answer about their consumption frequency, either I consume this food most of the time, occasionally or never. And then for the 16 components, we sum up them and we provide an organic score. And we examine the association between this organic sound and cancer risk. So what we found is a negative association between overall cancer risk, so a decrease of 25% of cancer risk among high organic food consumers compared to low organic food consumers. When we were looking at a specific site, we found that the negative association was the case for the all lymphomas as well as for postmenopausal breast cancer. And we didn't find any association for the other cancer sites. We also did a sensitivity analysis by including in the organic score only main determinants of the pesticide exposure, so vegetal products, and we didn't find any association for postmenopausal breast cancer, but we did find the association remained with all lymphomas.
Dr. Chavarro, you wrote a commentary for this paper. Can you summarize the main points that you made in your commentary?
Thank you for inviting me to this podcast, first of all. So I think there are several important points. One is that this is an incredibly important paper. As you may remember, 3 years ago, the International Agency for Research of Cancer decided that there was enough evidence to classify 3 pesticides commonly used in agriculture as carcinogenic to humans based primarily on animal studies, but also on studies of occupational exposure in humans. However, most of us who are not involved in agriculture get our exposure to pesticide residues via our food, and therefore the interest and the importance of the study. So one thing that is very compelling about this study is its consistency not only with one of the IARC findings, which is that IARC found that there is sufficient evidence to classify it as carcinogenic for its association with non-Hodgkin lymphoma specifically. That's one of the 3 cancers that they found associated with exposure to pesticides. And this study also finds an association not only with non-Hodgkin lymphomas, but also with other lymphomas. So that consistency is important. And a previous study from over in the UK also finds an association with non-Hodgkin lymphoma. So that consistency speaks volumes. There are a few issues with this paper that I think do not diminish its importance, but make it urgent to think of how are the next studies going to be designed. One is the questionnaire validation. So assessing intake of diet is difficult. Assessing intake of organic foods is notoriously difficult, even among diet. And that is because deciding to eat organic foods or not is a decision that has a very strong social and economic determinants. So there's plenty of opportunities for getting the wrong answer if you don't take into consideration not only whether or not people are consuming organic foods, but why is it that they're consuming organic foods. One issue that I have with this paper is that even though the authors had access to information of why people are choosing not to eat organic foods, they consider all non-consumers of organic foods the same, meaning if you're not consuming organic foods because of price barriers, because of limited availability, or because you just don't care, you are considered the same, which may be the relevant biological issue, but it doesn't address the issue of why is it that people are consuming organic foods and it doesn't address the issue of compounding. So that's one thing. The other thing that I have an issue with this paper is that their tool for assessing organic food consumption is not validated, meaning we do not know if consuming organic food, as reported by participants in the study, is truly measuring what they want to measure, which is reduced exposure to pesticide residues through diet. So this is not necessarily a flawed assumption. So there have been at least two different groups in the United States that have shown that using food intake data from food frequency questionnaires can be used to classify people according to their burden of exposure to pesticides, one using data from the MESA study, and one is our own group where we found that combining data from the food frequency questionnaire data with data from the surveillance data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture can be combined in a way that predicts urinary pesticide residues in NHANES and in one of our studies. So the assumption that you can do it is not unreasonable. It's that they just don't show us that what they think they're measuring is in fact what they're measuring. I think the main point of the study is that we should probably pay more attention to this and we should probably study it more, in particular as the finding for non-Hodgkin lymphoma appears to be consistent based on what has been shown at this moment.
Dr. Shavaro, your commentary gives us more context on the issue of using a self-reported food score. Can you talk about the food score in terms of whether it makes any distinctions between the types of food that might carry different amounts of pesticide residue, for example, meat and dairy products versus certain types of produce that are known to have higher or lower levels of pesticide residues?
So in the paper by Dr. Baudry and her colleagues, their approach was to assess a group of 16 different types of foods that could be available as organic and non-organic, and essentially assign a score of 0 if you never consumed it, 1 or 2, which assumes that each type of food has equal weight, meaning consuming, let's say, organic dairy would have the exact same effect as consuming organic fruits and vegetables or consuming organic meats and so forth. So this is a very practical approach. It makes it for a very easy to understand scoring system, but it has some problems. As you alluded, the amount and type of different pesticides that different foods are contaminated varies a lot. Varies a lot by crop, varies a lot by type of food, and even within individual classes of food, it varies substantially. So for example, even if you use a large amount of pesticides with a particular crop, let's say like corn or avocados, because we do not eat the part of fruit that is actually exposed to the pesticide, consuming an organic corn or organic avocados would have relatively minimal, if any, impact in your actual exposure to pesticides, which is very different if you're thinking about organic lettuce, for example, organic celery, organic strawberries, where you're actually eating the part of the fruit or vegetable that is most exposed to pesticides. And of all the different types of foods, as far as we can tell, what accounts for the overwhelming majority of exposure to pesticide residues, at least in the U.S., are fruits and vegetables. And that's the sensitivity analysis that Dr. Baudry was referring to when she talked about her study. And so it makes sense if you are able to get an idea not only of major classes of fruits and vegetables, but also get some additional detail on some of these fruits and vegetables or other foods to give different weights to different types of foods, reflecting their actual pesticide contamination, which is an approach that we have taken and that the MESA group has taken. It's quite remarkable, actually, that using a very simplified approach as the one that this group has decided to use, they're still able to find an association with lower risk of non-Hodgkin lymphoma, which to me suggests that probably the true association is much, much stronger if you were able to refine your exposure to pesticides.
Thank you. Dr. Baudry, your paper really brings into relief the importance of food-based pesticide and cancer risk as a public health issue. Can you tell us more about what we currently know in public health about the link between food-based pesticide exposure and cancer risk, and how your research informs what is already known?
First, diet is the main exposure in the general population, but usually it's among farmers or in occupational study that the most study have been focused, and they found in general very strong association between lymphoma and pesticide exposure. Regarding the risk in the general population, it's still unclear, but at least for France, recent reports from the French National Research Health Institute show that besides the effect of occupational exposure, one of the possible risks is Parkinson among the general population, and specifically among pregnant women. There is also a risk of Parkinson, but study needs to be conducted. And I think what we showed, it's not that consuming conventional food or vegetables increase the risk of cancer, but really that the first study, which is important in the sense or we need to focus more on the relationship between pesticide exposure at levels observed in the general population and lymphoma.
Thank you, Dr. Bowdery. Dr. Shavaro, both you and Dr. Bowdery have discussed how this paper really raises the importance of further studies on the link between pesticides and cancer risk. Can you discuss the specific issue of collecting data on dose and exposure duration regarding pesticides in conventional foods?
So that's probably one of the biggest challenges of following up on these findings. The traditional way of examining the health effects of pesticides is using urinary biomarkers as your measure of exposure, which has a very natural appeal for not only quantifying the actual exposure, but getting at the specific agent that may be involved in any potential health effects. The problem with this approach is that urinary pesticides have very, very short half-life. So whatever you're able to measure, any pesticide residues that you measure in urine or in any other tissue, is really reflecting exposure over the last few hours. So if you're interested in chronic diseases like cancer or cardiovascular disease or diabetes or any other major chronic disease, you're probably not interested in what happened to a group of people over the last few hours, but their long-term exposure to dietary pesticides, which would require either collecting vast amounts of urine over time from a large number of people, and then measuring urinary pesticides in all these different urine samples, which makes this type of study prohibitively expensive, or coming up with a way in which you can get a satisfactory assessment of their overall long-term exposure. And I think what this paper highlights is one of these approaches, is can you actually design a relatively low-cost dietary assessment tool, like a questionnaire-based tool, that can give you an idea of people's long-term exposure to pesticides and use that as a way to screen hypotheses. So let's say if it doesn't pass this minimum threshold of identifying an association with a questionnaire-based method that has been validated against urinary pesticides, then it's probably not worth the investment of putting millions and millions of dollars into urinary pesticides measurements. But if it does, maybe it does warrant additional investment into looking at this particular exposure and trying to clarify what specific pesticide might be involved in the association, and not only an overall measure of exposure to pesticides as a whole, which is what this distinction of organic, non-organic is getting you. It tells you that there probably is something about pesticides, but it doesn't tell you which ones, it doesn't tell you what doses, it doesn't even tell you what specific fruits and vegetables are being the vehicles that might be responsible for this association.
Well, I want to thank Dr. Bowdery and Dr. Shavaro for joining us today. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure, and a pleasure talking to you, Dr. Bowdery.
Thank you.
I'm Marian Widener with JAMA Internal Medicine, and I've been talking with Dr. Bowdery of the University of Paris and Dr. Shavaro from the Harvard School of Public Health. For more podcasts, visit jamanetworkaudio.com. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Stitcher and Apple Podcasts.